Well, we're up against it time-wise, but I didn't know that Billy was going to talk about Luke chapter 23. I'm going to talk to you about Luke chapter 22. So if you've got your little Luke's Gospel in front of you, I want to show you some of the things that relate so closely to what Billy was saying and relate it directly to the whole theme of regret. So I wonder whether you would grab your little Luke's Gospel and put your finger in page 71 and keep your finger in there for me, because I'd like to talk a little bit about regret. Let me tell you about another terrible incident that happened. Adam Lanza's dad gave his first interview a little over a year after his son walked into Sandy Hook School. Can you remember that elementary school on the news? Adam Lanza went in with firearms and killed 26 children and teachers. But his father gave an interview, and this is what his father said. "I don't think I will ever be able to make new friends again or live a normal life. This defines me, who I am, and I can't stand that. You cannot get any more evil. How much I beat myself up because of my son. Because he's my son. I wish he'd never been born." And of course, when it comes to issues of regret, sometimes it's about things that we've done. Sometimes it's about things that we haven't done. And Peter Lanza goes on and says this: "I hadn't seen my son for 2 years. His mother and I had divorced. For years, I did nothing. I regret I did nothing." And as I read that, I wonder whether you picked up and recognized some of the features of regret. Regret says, no possible future. I've closed off options to myself because of what I've done or what I've failed to do. Regret defines who I am. I am measured by my actions, and the verdict against me is condemnation. Maybe from others, maybe from myself. I know I don't deserve anything good. And of course, regret says as well, favorite phrase of regret is, if only, if only. I wish I'd never done it. I wish I could turn back the clock. And so what is emotion? It's an emotional pain that is really difficult to deal with because there's no remedy. Anxiety, despair, in many ways, they're things about the future. But regret is to do with the past. And the past is closed to us, isn't it? It's just there. The die has been cast. So what is regret? It's a crushing emotional encounter with the past in the present that seems to have mastery over my future. We're all thinking of things right now that we wish hadn't been part of our story. And in fact, if I was to put some of the things that you're thinking up about on the screen right now, you'd probably want to run out of here and move to another country, wouldn't you? Which of us are the people that we could be, should be, or ought to be? But many of those things are hidden in our stories, aren't they? Or are they? Because there is one set of eyes, says the Bible, that sees and knows everything that we've done. The Bible tells us the story about a God who is present, and he has a verdict on what we've done with the lives that he has given us, what we have given ourselves to, how we have treated other people, and most definitively, what place we have given him in our lives. And we're going to look into this little story that's found in Luke chapter 22 here on page 71, because there is somebody here who had a terrible encounter with regret. He's one of the most famous Christians. There is a huge cathedral named after him in Rome. It's St. Peter. So let's catch up with the little story. Can you see at the top of page 71 where it says Simon? He's Simon Peter, so I'm just going to call him Peter. And the Lord Jesus says to him, verse 31, "Simon, Simon, Satan has asked to sift all of you as wheat, but I have prayed for you, Simon, that your faith may not fail, and when you have turned back, strengthen your brothers." But he replied, "Lord, I am ready to go with you to prison and to death." And Jesus answered, "I tell you, Peter, before the cock crows today, you will deny three times that you know me." Are you already getting a picture of how bold Peter is? In his own mind, he is a certain kind of guy, and it's a great kind of thing. Loyal, faithful, brave, will stand with his brothers. That's the picture that he has of himself. And each one of us in this room, we have a sense of who we are because we aspire to be those things. But sometimes our aspiration exceeds our delivery of that. We judge ourselves by our very best intentions. We want to be noble. And so there's the self-talk there. Lord, I'm ready to go with you even to prison and death. And Jesus looks at him plainly and says, I tell you, Peter, before the cock crows today, you will deny three times that you even know me. Peter has an image of himself, dare we say, a delusion of himself. But sometimes it's going to require a very difficult moment to reveal that. Two places we can see most vividly who we really are. One is in our past. And we look back and there are moments of choices, decisions, things that we've gone after, ways that we've dealt situations that perhaps were unwise. Maybe we've squandered opportunities, squandered money, squandered time, squandered relationships. But there's also things that we have committed and done. I know I'm speaking amongst many who will have a connection to a local Anglican church. In one of your confessions, it says we have sinned in thought, word, and deed. And here Jesus is telling us that those things in the past are not things that will surprise him if they're in our story. He's not surprised at all, because here he tells Peter straight, I know what you're going to do. You are going to deny me. Now that's staggering, isn't it? Because all the way through this story, we've been seeing that Jesus has been doing the very works of God and claiming to be God. Can there be any greater sin than to deny the living God? No chance, Peter. Jesus, I'll never do that. In one of the other Gospels, he says, I will not. I'll stand with you come what may. What do you think is going to happen? Well, we don't have to wait very long to find out. If you flick over your page, we'll see. And if you take it up at the bottom of page 72, in the little verse 54, this is what happens. Then seizing him, they led him away and took him into the house of the high priest. This is Jesus being submitted to this kangaroo court because of political aspiration and the fact they just didn't want to accept who Jesus was. Those are the authorities doing that. Peter followed at a distance, and when some there had kindled a fire in the middle of the courtyard and had sat down together, Peter sat down with them. Notice the eyewitness detail here. A servant girl saw him seated there in the firelight. She looked closely at him and said, this man was with him. Come on, Peter, here's your moment, lad. Stand up. Be the guy that you really like to think that you are. But he denied it. Woman, I don't know him, he said. A little later, someone else said to him, you also are one of them. Man, I am not, Peter replied. About an hour later, another asserted, certainly this fellow was with him, for he is a Galilean. Peter replied, man, I don't know what you're talking about. And just as he was speaking, what happened? A cock crowed. Jesus knew, and he was right. When that cock crows, it's as if the end of an exam. Pen's down now, the die is cast, things are set. You can't take back what is in your past. And now there is a verdict over who Peter really is. Not the best version of himself that he can think of, not his best intentions, who he really and actually is before people and before God. And it's so personal. Look at the little verse 61. I would have hated to be there in this moment. The Lord turned and looked straight at Peter. Then Peter remembered the word the Lord had spoken to him. Before the cock crows today, you will disown me three times. Talk about a dark night of the soul. The Lord Jesus looks at him. And it wouldn't have been a condemning look. It would have been a look to say, see, I knew, I know, and that is why you need me. You can kid yourself. You can pull the wool over anybody's eyes. But I've got eyes of fire. And I knew that you would need me. But you see what Peter does. And he went outside and wept bitterly. You can imagine the self-talk in that moment. You're pathetic. You're useless. There's no way back. Everyone will know. I've thrown it all away. Nobody will ever have any time for me, not even God. Please pick up on the little phrase outside, pushed outside. That comes up quite often in the Gospels to talk about not just a living hell, but a real hell, being pushed away from God. And he wept bitterly. The end. Well, I've got 4 minutes to tell you how it's not the end. It's not the end. You can imagine where Peter was at that time. He was thinking, is there redemption for me? Is there a way back? I had a situation a few years ago where me and my family, stupidity on my point, I do regret it. I found myself in a situation where me and my family, we needed to be rescued by Mountain Rescue. Ask me about the story later. Hugely embarrassing. And they didn't just come in a Land Rover. They sent one of them big helicopters. And they picked us up off the side of the hill, took us to the hospital, checked us all out, and then gave us a right good dressing down. And all I could remember was, I can't believe this has happened to me. How could I have been so stupid? I need to make up to it for it. I need to redeem myself. So in a moment of sheepishness, I spoke to the person nearby who was one of the officers involved and said, I'd like to make a donation to the Mountain Rescue and to the helicopters. Just out of interest, you know, I was thinking I'll give him 150 quid. Just out of interest, how much did it cost you to come out for me tonight? And this was 15 years ago. 10 grand. I didn't have 10 grand. I couldn't pay it off. Neither could Peter. Neither could Peter. But right in the middle of this is the shadow of the cross over what Peter has done. He's right in the middle of it. Because Jesus goes now on trial, and they bring accusation after accusation to say, you deserve death. But nobody could do it. He is declared innocent. But he goes to a cross anyway. The cross is that for is a death sentence for betrayal, for rebellion, for being murderous and for being hateful. Jesus had done none of that. So the question that we are left with is, if he is not dying for his own sin and guilt, whose sin and guilt was he dying for? And of course, in this moment, the penny drops for Peter. It's for anybody who has offended the living God. It is for anybody who has sinned against him. It is for anybody who carries regret and guilt and knows that they cannot redeem themselves before a holy God. And Jesus went into this not under compulsion, but out of love and grace. In fact, you could argue that his love compelled him. You see, in the Christian story, as Billy has unpacked for us, we do not redeem ourselves. Our debt is too big. It is a lot more than 10 grand. But he who was sinned against, we got 1 minute, was willing to redeem. I need to take you to one more sentence and I wrap up in 60 seconds. If you flick over your page, you'll find at the bottom of page 77, Peter comes up in the story again. When there is news that Jesus hasn't just died in the place of sinners, he is raised again. He can barely contain himself. If it were me, I'd have run the other way. I'm going to be found out. But not Peter. He knew something about Jesus. So the little verse 12 at the bottom says this. Peter, however, got up and ran to the tomb. Did you hear that? He ran in the direction of the one he had failed. Can I say my last sentence for tonight is, many of you will be nervous about doing that. But could I encourage you to run in the direction of Jesus? Because you will receive an amazing portion of grace. For some of you, you're in the midst of your regret. Allow your regret to drive you towards his grace. Can you do that?